Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brook.
Right, folks, welcome to the first episode of The Biggest Man in Cricket. I'm David Brook, and tonight I have the pleasure of introducing my first ever guest on the show. He was once described as having a grimace like Graham Gooch, the former England batter. He's played cricket all around the world. He scored test centuries at Lord's and at the Hallow Turf of Newlands Cricket Ground. He's coached, he's commentated, and more importantly now, just like any self-respecting former sportsman, he's gotten into paddle.
I am the biggest man in cricket, David Brook, and this is Ashwell Prince. Welcome, Ashy P.
Thank you, Brookie.
Thank you for being my first guest on this podcast, on this journey. And it's an honour to have you here.
And what an honour it is to be the first guest on the biggest man in cricket show.
I just got off the phone from Jay Shah, the head of the ICC. He was just handing over the mantelpiece of the biggest man in cricket to me. So it's a great privilege to take this biggest man in cricket role on. And I look forward to the journey.
I'm sure it's going to be a ball.
A ball. Ash, I can just say, listen, the paddle's working for you because you're looking hell of a fit. You're looking fit. I've known you for many years and you're looking fit.
Thank you.
Let's delve into that paddle journey first up. Like, before we even talk about what coffee you like, anything like that, let's delve into that.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you retire from cricket. You still got time to keep fit. Go to the gym. I've never been a big fan of running on the road. I ran because I had to run for my work.
Yeah.
But now I've always been a ball sports person, you know, Brookie. Football, tennis, golf, and now paddle. And I get a bit of a workout with it as well. So it's all good.
It's a great sport. It's a great sport. And I think you're made for it. To be fair, I wouldn't like to be your partner because I know how competitive Ashwell Prince is on and off the field. I've seen you in some of the warm-ups with the back in the day.
I've softened over there.
Have you softened? Okay, that's a good thing, eh? Ash, you've had a hell of a story. And a lot of people know your cricketing story, but a lot of people don't know everything about you. And I want to start kind of right from the beginning, back in the days of Port Elizabeth. And just kind of growing up in an environment where cricket was obviously... sport was in your family blood. Just starting out as a young cricketer in PE, what was that like?
Yeah, look, it was, as you say, I mean, the sport was always in the family. I have some pictures. Actually, during the recent school holidays, I was in PE with the kids visiting the family. And my mother got out all of her newspaper collections over the years. All the newspaper clippings. I think she was trying to say that she's proud of her son. Or maybe she was just
proud. That was the last of the newspaper clippings.
Maybe she was just proud of her newspaper collection. But yeah, obviously, and then some other pictures that go back. What? How old am I now?
I'm old. 47.
48 soon.
48, and I'll give you 46.
So yeah, probably go back 40 odd years.
Yeah.
Well, some of the early pictures of playing in the backyard with my brothers.
Mm.
There's one picture I think you may or may not. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
There's one picture where I'm in the backyard. I'll never forget it. Like, I can still remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
My dad is taking the picture, and I've changed my stance completely, as if to look straight at the camera. So like. So he's like, why are you standing like that? That's not your stance. And I was like, I was only about 5 or 6 years old. He said, if I stand in my proper stance, they'll only see the side of you. They won't know who's coming. They got to see the real face. So I have to show my whole face.
That's brilliant.
So that was me, 5, 6 years old. So I suppose that competitive spirit was always there.
Did your dad play cricket or did he play club cricket?
He did, but mostly club cricket. Played tennis in the community and golf and everything. We do everything.
Is he competitive? Is that where you get your competitive edge from? So obviously, like, coming through the Eastern Province, you know, obviously domestic cricket back in the day, back in that time, was extremely strong. Coming into that semi-pro, there wasn't even semi-pro in that.
No.
It was just amateur and amateur cricket and kind of getting into professional cricket from a provincial point of view. What was that like? And who were some of the teammates that kind of stood out for you in that era?
Yeah, look, I think you know, it's a topic that I've discussed a little bit over the years. You'll be aware, and obviously my journey is not your regular journey into professional cricket in South Africa, which is probably the way for 90%, if not more than 90% of the players to come through the school system. My journey was different. I played for a community club. The school that I attended in the hood wasn't like a cricketing school, although we played like the Wednesday afternoon 20 over cricket, yeah, which is now a big thing.
Retired in 25 not out.
No. We carry on. Keep smashing. So that's what we used to play.
Yeah.
But then the proper cricket, I played at the club at Galvanville. And so obviously, if you show a little bit more talent, you get through the junior ranks faster than into the senior team, second team.
Yeah.
And then first team probably at 14, 15. And I think, you know, looking back now, I've said it before, I won't change that journey because as a 14, 15-year-old, you're kind of in a dressing room amongst men. And I was fortunate at the time. It was, your cricket environment was very different at the time.
Yeah.
Meaning that all your provincial players and all your B-team provincial players and the B-teams, every province used to have a B-team. And it was very strong. And all those players were kind of contacted to the provinces. They all played on a Saturday for their clubs. And they all trained on a Tuesday and a Thursday or however many times you trained in the week.
Yeah.
They trained with you and you sort of rubbing shoulders with provincial players, A and B team players, and some even your teammates who are not provincial players within your club team, grown men, like playing the game for a couple of decades. You know what I'm saying? And I compare that to maybe the schoolboy cricket. And I've always been of the opinion that, you know, you can get into the school's first team at a young age, maybe grade 10 or whatever. But you're only sitting next to another 17 or 18-year-old and he can't really teach you much about the game.
Yeah.
Whereas my journey, I was sitting next to an Aldine Baptiste who was the West Indies overseas player playing for EP.
Yeah.
But his club was my club.
Wow.
And so when he played club cricket on a Saturday, I was able to sit next to an international cricketer and basically learn from scratch. Okay, this is how you pack your bag. Everything's going to have a space. Discipline, you know, like and little disciplines.
Like you're just bringing beers. That's your role as a young cricketer.
Yeah. And, you know, as a youngster in those days, you're like, you sit and you're quiet.
There's
you
respect.
Yeah, there's that respect. Yeah. Like now it's
you've got to know your place in the changing room. Where do you sit? I'll sit back there. There's
absolutely.
Welcome, sir. All of those kind of things.
Absolutely.
But I think that kind of, I mean, is that lost nowadays? I mean, you
well, I haven't been in a club team's dressing room for a while, but what I've noticed over the years is that first team club cricket has become a lot younger. You don't have the hardened sort of guys have been around for like potentially a couple of decades. The leadership styles are different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, I mean, back in the day, we used to know your place, be quiet, listen. Even in professional dressing rooms, I mean, I remember coming into the first ever dressing room in a professional match I played in the EP side. Saint Baptiste was there, Kepler Vessels as the captain. Even the rest of the guys who have been there for years, they kept quiet as well. Kepler is speaking now.
That's Kepler's dressing room.
Yeah.
Where, like coming into that professional, where did you bat? Were you always kind of 5-6?
No, I was always a middle order batsman, but my first game I had to open.
Really?
Yeah, myself and I had to open the batting with Philip Am.
Philip Am, okay, the legend Philip Am. Little did you know that opening would eventually help you later on in the protest, but we'll get to that.
It came around again.
It came around again.
Not very successfully. It didn't start successfully then either.
I think I read somewhere, I think it was Roger Telemachers, that obviously you worked with before it in Western Province and in the ranks there. I think he got you out in both innings on your debut, huh?
My debut.
Yeah.
For a pair of ducks.
And he probably never, he doesn't let you forget that, huh?
It couldn't have been a more illustrious start.
Or a worse bowler to because you're going to see him the rest of your days.
No, and we're good friends now, obviously. Yeah. I played a lot of cricket with Roger, teammates, and in opposing teams. But it's amazing. It's been an amazing journey.
Who was the coach at the time there at EP?
In PE at the time would have been, there was an Australian coach there, Jeff Hammond.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
he was only there for one season. he was responsible for South Australia winning the championship in Australia.
Okay.
And he sort of unearthed Jason Gillespie.
Oh, wow.
And then he had a big transfer to South Africa.
That's very cool. I never knew Australian coaches actually coached.
Yeah, one season.
In our provincial setup. That's crazy to think. And then, you know, how did the move to province happen? Because that's where your career kind of really took off. It was quite a quick move. You didn't spend too long in...
No, I didn't. So I was in the South African under-19s with Makaya.
Yeah.
Mark Boucher, Justin Kemp.
Okay.
Uta Dipenaar. Neil McKenzie was our captain. And that crop of young players came from SN19. In 1995 and 96. And what had happened was that in their respective provinces, the other players I just mentioned, Boucher, Dipenaar, McKenzie, the squads were younger and they had more gaps.
Mm.
And they sort of started filtering into the first team, provincial team. I was playing predominantly in the B team. And we had a team at Eastern Province where we had all the former pro tier players.
Mm.
They sort of retired or been dropped by the pro tiers.
Thomas Shaw's and there, is that, yeah, that kind of
thing? But batting lineup, I'll go through it. But they still had a good 2 or 3 years left in them.
Mm.
At provincial level.
Okay.
So I'm talking about Mark Rushmere, Philip Am, Louis Kuhn, Kepler Vessels, Dave Callahan. So that was the top five. And then Kepler as captain never played a six batsman. He always preferred the wicket keeper to be six.
Okay.
So you can have five bowlers.
Okay.
So that was the makeup of the team. So with five experienced players there, it was very difficult for me to break into the first team. I got a game here, came there, and obviously you know kind of you're getting one game because somebody's injured.
Yeah.
You put a lot on your shoulders and, you know, it didn't quite happen. Meantime, I was doing really well for the B side, like scoring regularly. So what had happened was Cricket South Africa selected a South African A side, and a lot of that South African A side was filled with the same youngsters who had been in the under-19 side.
Got you.
So McKenzie, Ntini, Boucher, Dipenaar, and I was included in that.
Okay.
And that series was against the West Indies. And Duncan Fletcher was the coach of that team.
Nice.
So I'll never forget, we played in East London against the West Indies. Bowling attack was Otis Gibson.
Okay.
Nixon McLean, Rion King, one or two others. So proper pace.
A little bit of pace.
Yeah. And bounce and the works.
Yeah.
And I was in at number three. We lost an early wicket. I went in early. Got through to lunch. Got out just after lunch for 70 odd. I'll never forget. Come up in East London into the dressing room. Sat down. Taking my pads off. A little bit pushed off because I played it. Can you say shit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Played a shit shot. So, like a little irritated because it was just after lunch. Handed there for the taking, but loose shot, got out just after lunch. Taking my pads off and a little bit frustrated. And Duncan was the coach. And Duncan came and sat next to me. So I thought, oh shit, I'm going to get it. Yeah. I'm going to catch it here now. I'll play the cock shot, whatever. No discipline. So Duncan was the head coach of Western Province.
Yeah.
Now, I described the EP side and the batting lineup. They had all the former national team players.
Mm.
Western Province had all the current national team players in the batting lineup. I'm talking about Herschel Gibbs, Gary Kirsten, Brian McMillan was still playing with the Proteus. I think
Eric Simons,
Matthews. But in the batting lineup, I'm missing one or two other names, John Commons. Mm. So these guys would be, they'd be away on international duty all the time.
Mm.
So while EP didn't have any gaps, they had lots of gaps because all their main players were playing for the country.
Gotcha.
So Duncan came and sat next to me and I thought, I'm going to get it now.
Yeah.
And he said, do you want to move to Western Province? I said, where must I sign? So that's how the move came about. He was impressed after one innings. And obviously I had a lot to learn still. I was, 20, 21 years old at the time.
What is he like as a coach?
Unfortunately, I only had one season with him because at the same time in those days, he was working for Western Province in South Africa, six months.
Yeah.
And he was working in the county setup for 6 months. So I had one season with him, and then he signed permanently in England with the county, and then he became England coach, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had one season, but it was a good season, and he is the man who gave me the breakthrough, the opportunity.
And then the opportunity, you took that opportunity. I mean, that Western Province, your start to your career was a great one.
H.D. Ackerman was another name.
H.D., yeah.
I forgot.
What a legend, eh?
Yeah, so he played a few test matches for South Africa, prolific scorer for Western Province and county cricket around the world where he's played. So, as I say, there were gaps there and there were opportunities there.
Was that professional yet? Were you getting paid properly? Like, well, not properly, but you were getting...
We were getting paid,
yeah.
We were getting paid
some lunch money, but not what the guys are earning.
Not what the guys are earning now. Arthur Turner was the CEO.
Yeah.
And I signed my... Well, I had a contract with EP.
Yeah.
I had to be released. Of course, they tried to sort of hold on to one of the...
Up and coming
young players. But for me, it was simple. Mm. I mean, at the end of the day, they came negotiating in terms of money.
Yeah.
And were prepared to match anything that Western Province was prepared to pay.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you can have the money, but if you don't have the game time, there's nothing you can prove.
Yeah.
So for me, it was about the game time.
Mm.
So I came to Western Province. Dalot, you must on the field.
I love it. And who was the captain at that time? Would it have been Eric or...?
At that time, it would have been Eric and Matthews, Craig Matthews, and it would... Depend on who's away for the national team and so on.
That's how I grew up, watching those guys play. And it's strange sometimes when you're in the cricket industry and you see former players and stuff these are the guys you grew up with. I remember, I mean, I don't get starstruck. I'm the biggest man in cricket.
Of course.
But the one time I did get starstruck was when I met the legendary Adrian Kuyper. I met him at a golf player and, you know, he long retired and that was an incredible moment. But that's how we grew up. We grew up with knowing the provincial players.
Mm-hmm.
The Proteas wasn't as strong as it is
from
a brand point of view, and from a power point of view as the international brand. So provincial cricket was everything, you know.
Yeah.
And we'll get into your kind of international debut, because I just want to understand from your point of view. You were part of that provincial setup when the Standard Bank Pro 20 series started.
Started, yeah.
Before that, there was only 4-day first class cricket
and
3-day on 4-day cricket and 50 over cricket. So from a player point of view, how did that happen? What was the general feel amongst the players?
Well, the catalyst to all of that T20 cricket was, I don't know if you remember, we had four teams in South Africa. It was kind of, I think, part owned by SuperSport.
Yeah.
And sponsored by Discovery.
Yeah.
So we had the Discovery Challenge. I don't know if you can remember the Discovery Challenge. So the Discovery Challenge were those four teams playing like what you would know now as a finals day in England.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you kind of have a semi-final, another semi-final, and then a final. And then the team who wins the Discovery Challenge would get a holiday sponsored by SuperSport.
Wow.
And we went to the Vic Falls at... Royal Livingston.
Was that a 50-over competition?
That was a 20-over competition.
So before... So
that was the start of...
Okay.
Of T20 cricket.
Yeah.
And then... The following season, I think England was the first country to make it into a league.
Yes.
But it originated in the...
And we're going to talk about the Vitality Blast, because, I mean, obviously you had time over in the UK and...
Yeah, I've got a medal as well.
And you got a medal. I got that. and we'll talk about that. But from a South African point of view, I mean, we obviously, you know, domestic cricket was strong. The crowds were there, you know, there was a snip, there was like a few international games, but it wasn't at the scale as it is kind of now. And then Pro 20 came in and all of a sudden there were hard hats and there were dunk tanks and all of those kind of things. All of a sudden the players, their profiles were completely boosted. Like, how did that transition happen? Because now you're going, I'm a first class cricketer. I've grown up only playing kind of 4-day cricket or 2-day cricket. Now I've got to I've only got 20 overs to bat, and if that, you know?
It was difficult. From a personal point of view, it was difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing because, I'll say it, yeah, because I never was able to get it back kind of thing. And what I'm trying to say is, as a kid, like 15, 16, sitting next to Baptiste in the dressing room, you know, you kind of, my game was all about every ball that's coming, I can hit to the boundary.
Yeah.
I can hit it to the boundary, either 4, 6 or whatever the case may be. So then, you know, that is you as a 14, 15, 16 year old. And then you realize when you become a professional, actually, I can't bat like that. If I'm going to become a test match player, I've got to sort of knuckle it down a little bit more disciplined, you know, more solid in defense. And then because test cricket is the be-all and end-all, you build your game towards being a test match player.
Yeah.
So then you spend sort of years nurturing that technique and the style of play. And then this game that you played at the start, all of a sudden comes in and you need to hit every ball to the boundary.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't do it.
You got no, you can't, you don't have time to get your iron.
Yeah. So initially there was a struggle and a difficulty with how soon do you start hitting? How long do you take to play yourself in? And then I think teams used to get bowled out a lot because you just whack, whack, whack. Everyone hits it in the air and out.
Yeah.
You know, and so it took some time to work it all out. And also, I think from a player's point of view, maybe some of us, and I was probably guilty as well, also felt that this thing is not going to stay.
Nah,
it's not going to stay.
A fad.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of seasons and then people will be like, nah, this thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's working now.
How's that work? Now you're commentating on one of those tournaments in South Africa, you know, which is quite a journey. But in between all of this, I mean, just before that whole Pro 20 started, you made your test debut. Tell us how that came about. Like, who was there a chief selector at the time, and how did it all pan out?
So again, I was I had quite a few years playing in the South African A team.
And you went on proper tours in that age back in the day.
Oh yeah.
You went on proper tours for the A team.
You toured, I'll never forget, Shooks, who's now the national team coach. He came with us 1 year as an assistant to Hilton Ackerman, which was HD's father.
His dad, yeah.
And that was to the West Indies. We went to Sri Lanka. Did we go to India? I can't remember if we went to India. I missed the England tour. I was a little bit young. They went a couple of years before. So we went on big tours and played a lot of cricket.
Yeah.
And if you weren't in the starting lineup, there wasn't like have a game here. You waited your turn before you got a game.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like, oh, everybody's got to get the game.
Yeah.
You wait your turn. So it was, some of them were tough tours because you could literally go on tour and get one game out of, you know, a month and a half tour.
And back then the tour fees weren't that great from an A point of view.
Nah.
So how did
absolutely. So then, so being part of the South African A side for a few years, and a few players have been part of that for a number of years. Dale Benkenstein was always captain of that, and he was touted as a future South African captain. HD was always there. Buta Dipenaar, Martin van Jaarsveld, I don't know if you remember him.
Great.
So those were kind of the guys. We were always on tour, the A side. And it was hard to break into the protest lineup at the time.
Because Martin van Jaarsveld is a perfect example of that.
Played a
handload of first-class cricket, but not a lot of international cricket.
Yeah. So then we came back. I started the season for Western Province, and I had a massive injury. Dived on the boundary, shoulder, did some serious damage, needed operation on the shoulder, and didn't play for most of the season. This is in 2001-2 season. Then when my shoulder was healed, like a good few months into the season, there was another South African A team selected. So I'd played one game for Province, got a score. And then the A side was selected to play against Australia when Australia was touring in 2002. So I got selected for the A side. And this is the time when new kids on the block, the commissioner was on the block. The commissioner.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith is one of the new kids on the block. And all that write-up was about Jacques Rudolph. He was another new kid on the block. And Graham. being sort of the selectors are having a look at them for the spot in the test squad. Aussies came, obviously we're talking about Australia at the turn of the century, probably one of the most successful teams in the history of test cricket. Steve Waugh's Australia. And in those days, played the full lineup in the SAA game, which is essentially your warm-up game. So Glenn McGrath, Brett Lee, Jason Gillespie, Shane Warne, that's bowling attack. And it was up in Potch. They batted first, I think. Or no, we batted first. I can't remember. I can't even remember who batted first. I think we batted first because it was early on day one. I was in at number three again, and I was in the first over. I think either Rudolph or Smith was out early on. Both of them didn't get a score in that game.
Mm.
We only scored about 200, but I scored 90. And at the time, like I say, I come back from an injury, and those two guys were red hot at the time.
Mm.
And all eyes were on them. And I think it was Rushdie Majid was the convener of selectors. And I must have thought, well, if we can get 90 against a full-strength Aussie team, then maybe we take a chance with them.
They took a chance.
So the next week I was in the test.
Playing against the same bowling lineup.
Yeah, on my test team.
Nice way to ease your way in.
At the Wanderers.
At the Wanderers. Facing Glenn McGrath, Jason Gillespie, Shane Warne, Brett Lee. How was that? I mean...
So, look, I think the fact that I scored 90-odd against the same bowlers the week before gave me confidence. Obviously, it's a different environment in a test match, full house and all that. But, you know, I always believe that as a child, like, you dream big, right? And your dream is about playing on the biggest stages of the world.
Mm.
So, like, if that was your dream as a child, you know, when people say about big crowds and intimidation, like, but isn't that what you're hoping for all your life, you know? So, I think... Yes, there are nerves, but I think the fact that I scored the 90 odd the week before kind of settled the nerves.
You had a reference point.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, a lot of coaches, I've never played professional cricket, but a lot of coaches have said, you know, often say that from a technique point of view, you know, the difference between an international cricketer and a provincial cricketer, there's not a lot of difference. It's more about the mentality, the belief that, that I'm made for this, I belong there. Obviously, some guys suffer with a bit of imposter syndrome, but some guys are just, the reason why they take that next step up is because they believe that they can and they believe that they belong there. Is that how you felt up front?
Yeah. So I think over my career, mentality has been my biggest strength.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, technique is important. You have to have the game to be able to manage. What I mean by that is, like, test match cricket in those days is that when you play against the best bowlers in the world, they don't bowl rubbish, right? So it's not like every other ball is going to be one that can go to the boundary.
Mm.
And the thing is that, so when they're on top of their game or when they're on point, you've got to have the game to be able to withstand that. You've got to be able to keep it out.
Mm.
So test match cricket, most of the time, is about, you know, can you keep the best bowlers in the world, can you keep their best deliveries out? Because if you can do that for 4 hours, you'll have a score.
Yeah.
You know, some will have more attacking strokes and some will be able to get to that 100 a lot faster because they have more attacking game. But you ain't getting to 100 if you can't keep them out.
100%. It's something like, I mean, I'm not saying you modeled your game on a guy like Shivnarine Chanderpaul, but Chanderpaul didn't give his wicket away. He just did not, whatever it took, he wasn't pretty to watch, but he was very effective. And he got into a position where saw himself in and then cashed in. Was your mantra?
Yeah, I think if you analyze players, one game plan doesn't work for everybody.
Mm.
And this is another thing if we get onto coaching.
Yeah.
One game plan doesn't work for everyone.
Mm.
Some players are naturally more attacking, and that's their strength. So the attacking game is stronger than the defensive game.
Yeah.
So you've got to be true to yourself. Mm. For me, you know, when we talk about mentality, my mentality was I back my defense, and the sort of the mindset it used to go with that is that you know, you have to understand that we're talking about the best bowlers in the world. Mm. But the mindset that goes with backing your defense is, you don't have a ball good enough to get me out.
Mm.
Right? So that's my mentality as a batsman.
Yeah.
You don't have a ball good enough to get me out.
Mm.
So if I'm playing a defensive shot or if I'm playing a leave, my judgment has got to be solid.
Mm.
My movement's got to be solid. And my technique's got to be solid and I trust it. Mm. And that's the belief. Now, obviously, we know the best bowlers in the world, of course, they possess a ball that's going to get you out.
Yeah.
But it's your skill plus your mindset plus your mentality plus your character, all of those things combined.
And that kind of like it was a kind of epitomize what that era was like in Proteas, with eventually Biff became the captain. He was the captain for, I think, over 50 games of your 66 test matches. I mean, that was the, you know, you can define eras by certain personalities,
absolutely,
right? Biff was kind of personality, personality.
He led from the front as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
And again, you talk about maybe some guys are easy on the eye.
Mm.
You know, I think Graham won't be, he'll be the first to admit that maybe he wasn't the easiest on the eye to watch. But when you're going into battle, you want him on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. And that defined, if you look at now, I mean, you're obviously involved now with the Proteas setup. And I want to talk briefly about the current setup, the Proteas setup. And not that I'm comparing eras, but this young side with very, I actually was looking at some, stats the other day, and I compared Kyle Verona. I mean, Kyle will say that you can't compare him to anyone. He's incomparable. And I was comparing him to Zach Crawley, right? Both 27 years old. Zach Crawley has played over 130 first-class matches, and Scholesy's played just about 93, 95 first-class matches, right? Now, they're the same age. 30 first-class matches doesn't sound like a lot, but that's an extra 120, 130 days in the field, right? From an experience point of view, a guy like Zach Crawley has played 30 first-class matches than Kyle Verona. Now, this young side, they don't seem to have the presence of your era where, you know, you front up, Biff's your captain, you've got Ashwell Prince, you've got Jock Ellis, AB de Villiers, Bouch, etc. But there seems to be this aura of they're playing for each other. They're actually enjoying themselves a hell of a lot. And I wanted to get your view on the comparison. Like, we talk about ICC World Cup trophies, Proteas, etc., haven't won, all of that kind of stuff. But if we win this ICC World Test Championship, is that as big as a World Cup?
I think so. You know, I honestly think so. I mean, a lot of people maybe will have different views. I think the World Test Championship is massive. You got to play some consistent cricket in countries that are difficult to win.
Mm.
You know, so, and to go to Lords and potentially go and win there, it's a massive deal. And I think it's important for cricket in our country that we do get over the line in one, I mean, as you say, in the World Cups, women and men's teams.
Yeah.
We've been close over the last 5 or 6 World Cups, different formats, T20 and 50 over World Cups. And now again, it's another massive platform and opportunity to do something significant. And it's a great opportunity for me. I think it's massive. And for the players, it'll be a big deal. At the end of the day, you know, there has been some rumblings in the media. Yeah, we only played against this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm.
Still got to beat them, right?
You got to beat them. But
away from home as well.
But also, at the same time, I want to say that the only way, and this is our mentality in the dressing room, you know, the only way we are going to be able to demand more matches against India, Australia, England, by beating them.
Yeah.
You know, so you can either go with your hands out and say, oh, please come and play against us so we can also make some of the money that you get from the major series.
Yeah.
Or we can just start beating everyone again like we used to back in the day, and then they want to play against us. And that's got to be the mindset.
It's like they don't need us. They must want us.
They must want us.
Because Virat Kohli hasn't won a test
series. They haven't won here yet. So, you know, it's got to be a big deal for them to come and win here. So, you know, obviously when India tour places like Australia, they make a big thing of winning there, but they have never won here. And that remains a fact.
Listen, you're going to England. You've got your passport ready. You had some time. And
passport's ready. Got to get the visa.
I'm the biggest man in cricket. I know a couple of them are there to get some visas sorted. But, you know, you've obviously played. You've got your experience in England. You played for Notts, actually. Not a lot of people know you started out playing for Notts first. But your time with Lancs was really where you cemented your legendary status there. Like, just briefly, just give us like an idea of the kind of the culture of cricket in the UK.
That's actually a solid question, because, you know, it's amazing. You know how much I love football, and you know how much the English people love their football.
Yeah.
But the cricketing person in the UK, in my experience, is a cricketing person. They couldn't care two hoots about the football.
Yeah.
You know, they grew up in their villages, started out at their clubs in their villages, you know, part of the county. Mm. And they support their counties, you know, and now they have the 100. I don't know how that's going in terms of the support.
Yeah.
But that's obviously for the new generation.
Yeah.
But they, you know, the cricketing person in England love cricket and they love Test cricket. Mm.
And you obviously embraced it. I mean, they embraced you. You embraced them because, I mean, you're a badger. We all like, you're a badger, a cricket badger, and that's what they love. You know, they want guys that really wear the badge well and just embrace it. But how did that even come about in the first place? Like,
well, I think I'd obviously, we had that tour in 2008. It was the first time we won in England as a Test team. I scored 100 at Lords. I scored next week. We went up to Headingley. I scored 100 there. So obviously I had a good series there, performed well in England. That's how the Notts deal came about. At the end of that series, they asked me to stay on and finish the end of the season for them. That didn't go too well. I was probably a little bit tired at the end of that series, and the end of the county season didn't go well. But Lancashire thought the next year they had VVS Laxman as an overseas player, and he had to, he could only stay for a certain amount of time. Then he had to go, and they asked me to come. And the thing is, like, you know, with these counties, they get a feel for, is this guy here for the money? Because let's face it, I mean, obviously money is a big deal.
Yeah.
Is this guy here for the money, or is he actually playing for our team? He's invested in the team.
Yeah.
And I think they get a good sense. And when you have people or, you know, senior international players come and represent your country. Mm. I think in my case, what was nice, I had a lot of young players in the dressing room, Livingston, Alex Davis, these type of guys. And I spent a lot of time with them. Mm. We enjoyed each other's company. They come through the ranks, you kind of supporting the young guys.
Yeah.
And they could see, you know, there's a guy here that is invested. Mm. And part of the reason also, it was a good place for me, is that Liverpool was just down the road.
100%. I mean, you've been a massive Liverpool supporter, but did you manage to get down to Anfield a couple of times when you were there?
Absolutely. It wasn't the glory days as it is now. We lost some Champions League games there against Ludo Goretz and the Manor.
Hungarian team along the way.
So, no, it wasn't as it is now, but I was obviously fortunate enough to go and watch some Champions League and Premier League.
Amazing.
Amazing.
And did that kind of era of you playing in England kind of, you know, set the tone for your potential coaching career? Was that where you thought, okay, I now need to start thinking about the next step in my career and getting into coaching?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say it was down to the stint in county cricket. After I retired, I had a role with Cricket South Africa as a selector initially. So they approached me after I announced my retirement and asked if I would join selection panel. And then whilst I was on the selection panel, there was a South African A team touring Australia. So we had selected the team. And then they said, actually, will you go with as a batting coach on this tour?
Mm. You've selected the batters. You must go and coach them. Yeah.
So actually I went on as a batting coach on the tour.
Yeah.
And so after that tour, I felt like I can probably make a bigger contribution to South African cricket as a coach rather than a selector.
Mm.
You know, because in selection, you just go around watching people, and then you get a sort of an inclination for who's got the goods.
Yeah.
And you make a few calls in the, but you know, it, for me, I felt I can make more of an impact on the ground.
And then you got the, you know, just fast forward a little bit to you got the job as the Cobras coach. The youngsters that you're going to England with now coming up, the Carl Varanas, the David Beddinghams, perhaps that was a bit more experienced. Dezorzi came down from the Titans purely to because he wanted to challenge himself and play for you as a coach, because he identified, he saw a lot in your game, in his game. Like, how's it seeing these kind of, these youngsters come through the ranks and now playing test match cricket?
Yeah, look, obviously a lot has been made about the fact that in those 4 years that I was there, we didn't win a trophy. We came close a few times. I think people tend to overlook that they were sort of 19, 20-year-olds, and we were putting a lot of responsibility on their shoulders because, you know, Western Province had been, or the Cobras had been, serial winners. And but we're talking about people like Levy and Patik and Villas and Kemp and a lot of experience having retired and a new generation coming through. And people sort of didn't give them the opportunity to gain the experience, but the expectation was there. And maybe I was part of creating that expectation as well. But having said that, I think at the time, you know, there was no other team who had more international debuts for the country. Talking about Yanaman, Peter Malan, Subair Hamza, Carl Varane, David Beddingham, George Linder. And so that obviously gives you, you know, a sense of pride that you played a little bit of a role in their careers. And now they've gained a lot of experience over the years, and they've got the opportunity to go to England and do something special for the country.
And now they're chirping you in there. Spolsy and Betters are chirping you.
Betters has been on to me already saying that, unlucky, we qualified in first position on the log. So we'll be in the home dressing room. We won't be going to the away dressing room, so we won't see your name on the board.
Listen, I mean, obviously these youngsters are chirpy and they've got social media these days and stuff, but you know, we're sitting in one of the most beautiful settings here for a podcast. Our friends, thanks to Bootleg, our friends who've hosted us here today. And obviously cricket is a banter game, you know, we not so much these days with stump marks and stuff, but you know, we're kind of heading to the end of our conversation, but something I've always been interested in is kind of like back in the day when there was no stump marks. You know, we're sitting, what was the best roast you've ever had in on a cricket field where you actually doffed your cap and you said, yeah, you actually had a good laugh and it threw you a little bit.
Excuse me. So I was batting in the middle of the MCG against Australia, and they were on top of us. They were always on top of us. 3-4 slips in the gully. And Andrew Simons was in the gully, like big Andrew Simons in the gully. And he's from behind, he's like, he looked at me like, mate. So I put my pads on, put my bandy legs, said, mate, you wouldn't be able to catch a pig in a hallway with legs like that. So I was just like, I turned around and he was like, okay. That was a good one.
Yeah.
But one of the other funny ones is like, we were at Headingley.
Yeah.
And this wasn't a chirp from like one of the players. But AB and I, it was that game where AB claimed a catch, he wasn't sure.
It slipped there, yeah.
It slipped.
And the England fans
giving it to him.
Yeah.
And then Amla came and he and Michael Vaughan claimed a similar thing in the same game.
Oh.
Anyway, so AB came into bat and he is getting loads of abuse. And then we started pumping them. Him and I had a massive partnership. Then late in the day, from the Western Terrace, the people kept running onto the field. And the stewards tackling these guys, throwing them back over the board. So then like half an hour or so later, 45 minutes later, it goes quiet. No more streakers running onto the field. And then this one guy climbs over the advertising boards. Mm. And I think his mate or somebody threw his shoe onto the field. So it's between the board and the boundary rope. It's not on the pitch.
Yeah.
So he's just climbing over to go and collect his shoe. Stewart comes in and takes him out. And the whole of the Western terrorist breaks out. All he wanted was his shoe.
You don't get that kind of bench.
Nah, right? And the English fans, you know, in that same game, Hashim Amla was fielding in front of them. He was fielding in front of the Western Terrace late on a Friday afternoon. You've got your head on, upside down. Because he had the big beard,
no
hair.
Brilliant.
Head on, upside down.
Brilliant. Hash probably just smiled and said,
If anyone could take it, he could take it.
Nah, that's awesome. Ash, we're reaching that kind of the end of the day. We've got like an hour to go before the end of play, right? And then we've got a section here called the declaration. Biff's in the change room there. You're on 175, not out, right? And we need you to, you were obviously one, he said, listen, you've got 10 minutes to get to your double 100, right? So you need to think quick. I'm going to ask you six questions, quick fire questions.
Okay.
And you need to give me quick answers, not one word answers, but just quick answers because Biff's, he wants an hour at the
Belters tonight.
He wants to declare. So, first one, what's the one thing people always get wrong about you?
People think I'm an angry man.
And you're not.
The people that know me would say different.
Yeah, definitely. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen happen on a cricket field?
Jeez. I'd say in a match, I seen a striker hit the ball back at the non-striker, hit him on the helmet, and get caught at Madoff. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Right, this is a tough one. I need you to think about this one. A cold, wet night at Anfield in the Champions League or an unbeaten century in a New Year's test at Newlands? Which one are you choosing?
Newlands.
And there's more the unbeaten part, eh?
Absolutely. Not out. Fitting.
Who's your favourite sports personality outside of cricket, past or present?
I would have to say Tiger Woods. Just the consistency. But then that's also a difficult one because football is massive for me. Steven Gerrard would be another one. Yeah. And the reason for that would be, you know, I hate it when people compare Steven Gerrard and say, oh, he didn't win the trophies. Mm. Oh, he didn't have the teammates.
Yeah.
You know, but to do what he did for Liverpool all that time, carry that team. Mm. You know, and Champions League hit some of those screamers that he did. Mm. Gerrard, what a hit. What a hit, son.
Right. If AI had been around during your playing days, what would you have asked it to help you with?
Well, AI, can you please decipher how I'm going to deal with Shane Warne and Muralitharan?
We cannot help you with that right now. Right, this is a serious question and one that it's going to come back to haunt you. Right. Preferred paddle partner?
What?
Carl Verona or David Beddingham?
David Beddingham all day. We gave them our moves a puck the other day. Verona and young Stokkies.
Daniel Smith.
Daniel Smith.
Yeah.
Me and Bedders gave him a puck.
That's good to hear. Hey, you'll love that, huh? That's it for the first episode. Ashwell Prince, I've got a little gift from my friends here at Bootlegger. Some coffee to go home with. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you very much.
And it's been an honor to have you as our first guest. I'm the biggest man in cricket, David Brooke, and that was Ashwell Prince.
Thanks,
Brooke. Thanks,
brother.
Thanks, Bruce.